Our warrior ancestors were kinky ass motherfuckers. They would do things like sniff each other's nuts. They would get naked in the gymnasiums and they would only have a little string to keep their foreskins in place while they wrestled, all oiled up and, you know, wrestling on the dirt floor. So they'd get all dirty and oily and a little bit of pre-cum would seep out of their cocks and it would kind of seep through the string. And then these beautiful women, after the guys wrestled, would come and scrape all the pre-cum and the oil, the olive oil on their skin and the dirt off their bodies and then sell it, bottle it and sell it as a pre-workout energizer to other males.
Oh yeah, my favorite podcast is the Sick and Wrong Podcast, 'cause it's a very good podcast. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. It's a funny, 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 funny show. Sick and Wrong Podcast is a wonderful podcast. It's a miraculous podcast. It's like the best podcast in the whole wide, wide, wide world.
Good evening. Welcome to Sick and Wrong, the world's source for antisocial commentary. I'm on your host, E. Simon.
Hi, I'm Kate Rambo. Hiya.
What's the crack there, Kate Rambo?
Not much, mate. I'm tired. What about you? I've got no crack. I'm boring.
Well, we're recording early this week.
Yeah, no, I'm thrown out of a loop.
Yeah, the schedule is all awry here. We're recording early this week because we're heading to the Bay Area this weekend for Ozzy's third birthday.
Yes, by the time people are listening to it, we should be horrifically hungover in a graveyard in San Francisco. And I will be complaining because I will have been forced to spend the whole weekend surrounded by children.
It's a lot of kids. My irritable bowel sister is throwing a big party with a lot of kids. She said that there's going to be a bouncy castle and she expects you to bounce in it when you're loaded.
I will not be bouncing in any form of bouncy castle.
She said that it's going to be some special Kate Rambo bouncy time.
That sounds disgusting. And no, because I refuse to touch anything that a child has once touched because their hands are always sticky and nasty.
Well, if you get as drunk as you did on Thanksgiving, who knows what might happen?
I will be in bed by 10. That's what will happen.
You might shart in the bouncy castle. Did you do that on Thanksgiving?
What? Shart? No, I did not
shart. I thought that's why you had to go to bed early.
No, I nearly fell off my stool, my bar stool, and that's why. But this time I shan't get as loaded. I shan't. Although
I might. Yeah, right.
I might.
With all those kids around, you're just going to get really... You're going to set a very poor example to these children.
Wherever Wackerly is standing, because I am also sure he will be standing away from the children, you will also find it will be a little Pisces corner, me and Wackerly.
Wackerly's as awkward as the rabbi was around kids.
And me.
And you're very awkward around kids. Maybe it's a British thing.
Well, no. I partly do it as a defense mechanism because the minute you show a child that you are interested in anything they have to say or do, that is it. They're coming up to you. They're wanting to chat to you. They're wanting to be near you. But if you just put on a fuck off attitude, then guess what? They don't want to come up to you. It's perfect.
Yeah, Ozzy, when he comes like within 3 feet of Kate Rambo, starts crying.
He just turns around. It's great.
And he runs away.
Up until he can...
Might be because of the shart. And he's like, I don't want to go near there.
The only person in that room who sharted is Ozzy.
Well, he's allowed to shart. That's the thing. At what age can you no longer is it no longer socially acceptable for you to shart?
At what age? Probably, I don't know, by the time you can speak and wipe your own ass, what, 5?
I'm assuming Ozzy wipes his own ass.
No, David.
At 3?
He can't wipe his own ass. What are you talking about?
He's potty trained. He uses a little toilet.
Yeah. Who do you think wipes his ass? Your sister.
We'll have to ask her about that.
No, it's a fact, David. He can't even hold a pencil. How do you
think
he can?
But he's wearing normal. He's not wearing diapers anymore.
No, but who? I can't believe you think that he can wipe his own ass when he can't. He can't even speak. He can't even hold a fucking pencil. But yet somehow this boy can wipe his own ass and have the cognitive recognition.
He colors in his coloring book. He can hold.
He doesn't color within the lines.
Well, that's a far cry from wiping your own ass.
He cannot wipe his own ass.
I will bet you dollars to donuts. Your dollars to my donuts or vice versa. My dollars to your donuts. All right, I'll bet you a donut.
All right, this is fine for me.
That Ozzy can wipe his own ass.
Yeah, I've just won myself a fucking donut.
I could wipe my ass at the age of like 2.
Yeah, you reckon. You reckon you could.
I think so.
I've seen pictures of you at the age of 2. No, you couldn't.
Well, we bought Ozzy an array of fart-related items.
Yeah.
The kid does love farts. Not necessarily sharts, but he probably doesn't. He's probably fond of sharts too.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went to Wacko. The Wacko soap plant in Los Feliz. You got him a fart whistle, a supersized whoopee cushion, a fart like soundboard device.
Yeah, he'll like that.
Some like fart, like what are they, like stink bombs?
Stink bombs, he'll also like. In fact, that's the only time I'm going to get anywhere near the bouncy castle is to throw a couple of stink bombs in there and then to walk away.
Just ruin the party. I think Jared and Stephanie are going to appreciate all these fart-related gifts.
I think they are.
It's almost revenge for my sister's SBDs all these years.
SBDs?
SBD.
SBD. Single. Oh, Silent but Deadly.
Silent but Deadly. She was... Remember Shaun of the Dead when he'd be like, sorry.
Yeah.
My sister used to do that.
Oh my God, gross.
Yeah, like we'd been like the pacer on our family trip and she'd be like, sorry. Like, what are you... Oh! It was like she... Yeah, and it lingered. Like that cranberry song. Queen of the SBD. You know what's funny? The rabbi. Did Drunk Dad do this? Like, would Drunk Dad fart and laugh about it? Like, was that like comedy in your home?
I'm from a Victorian household, D.
So like, your brothers didn't fart?
Maybe when we were kids, but once we got over a certain age, it was like full on Victorian decorum in our room. And plus, we never saw each other or hung out with each other.
Yeah, what about like when you'd walk into the room watching TV, just. They wouldn't just, you know, your mom or dad wouldn't rip a fart?
No, I can remember.
It's a very cold, distant family.
It's called decorum. That's what we had, decorum, right?
I remember the rabbi would just look us in the eye and just rip like a zipper fart, just this impressive fart and be like, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That would put me off my dinner.
That was a good one. Anyway. But yeah, we're going to spend some time in the Bay Area, and I'm sure not this week's second show, but the next one we'll talk all about it. We are planning on doing kind of a tour of the Harold and Maude cemeteries, because Harold and Maude was all filmed in the Bay Area.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. I love that one shot of like that cemetery in Colma.
Yeah, the military one. I like the other Colma.
No, I like the one where
he first meets her.
Panning out and she has like the yellow umbrella.
Yeah, where he first meets her.
Yeah, that one's really cool.
Yeah.
But they're all kind of in the same area there, South San Francisco. So we're going to do that. But you know what I was thinking? When we're in San Francisco, we may walk across the Golden Gate Bridge.
We have yet to do that.
Just so we can contemplate suicide.
Well, I mean, it's what you've got to think about while you're walking across it. If you saw somebody who was looking like they were preparing to jump, would you do anything?
Probably record it.
Over them record it, would you do anything?
You know, I don't know. Probably not. I mean, if this person wants to do that, who am I to stop this person from euthanizing themselves?
I'd just be like, people who commit suicide are pussies. Are you a pussy?
I don't know. I wouldn't say that.
No, that's what I'd say to them.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I respect his decision. If he doesn't want to live anymore, then so be it. At least he's not hurting anyone, except for maybe the fish.
No, he's hurting all his friends and family. Like how we're assuming it's a man. All his friends and family.
And you care about his friends and family?
No, but that's why I think anyone who commits suicide is a fucking pussy, because they are selfish. They're only caring about themselves.
How do you know he's not a pedo?
Well, pedophiles have friends too. That's why they have the dark net. There's going to be some people on there who are like, damn it, he died and he had like 800 gigabytes and we never got to see it. Damn you, Samuel.
So if Jimmy Savile and Gary Glitter were holding hands
romantic.
About to jump off the London Bridge, you'd be like, you're a pussy, you two.
Well, firstly, I'd be like, Gary Glitter, you're a pussy. Can I have your autograph? Because I fucking love
that. You wouldn't want Jimmy
song.
Savile's autograph?
No, because I never liked Jimmy. It was never for me. It never fixed anything in my mind for me.
I wonder if you can get an autograph Savile picture on eBay.
We can look. I wonder if it'd be on eBay. It might be something on like a Murderpedia
site. That's a
site.
Great gift for your British friends.
It is. Well, for our autograph bathroom.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Write it down. Make a note.
So you're, it's kind of impossible not to contemplate suicide while walking across the Golden Gate Bridge, because like every 10 feet, there's a sign saying don't commit suicide and call this hotline. And there's like phones you can call. There's also, I haven't actually been up there in years, but I've heard there's like netting.
Oh, is
there? So you can't actually even jump off.
Well, that seems wise. It's been a while since that film came out, The Bridge.
Yeah, The Bridge.
Yeah.
I knew a stripper, actually, who was really good friends with the guy that made it. And I was trying to get him to come on Sick and Wrong. I don't know why he wouldn't.
I mean, he was in Bizarre Magazine, so I don't know why he wouldn't have done
Yeah,
Sick and
Wrong. I mean, what better audience for him to discuss that movie? But you know what's funny? She said that because he couldn't go to like the Department of Natural Resources and say,
yeah,
oh, I'm filming a movie about people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. So what he did is he got a permit saying he was doing a nature film on the migration of like birds.
Yeah.
Like albatross and seagulls and all that. So they gave him permits to like set up cameras. But actually, he was filming people who were jumping. It's a great documentary.
Yeah, that one dude who survived. And he's like, I regretted it. And it's like, yeah, because you did a pussy thing. Living is tough. Dying is easy. Stay alive, people.
I respect people's decision if that's what they want to do. But that's got to be, I mean, you're like hitting concrete. Like the yeah. ocean is like concrete.
Yeah, you get full velocity, don't you?
So I don't think I would jump off the Golden Gate. So how would you snuff it if you're going to snuff it?
Well, I am an American now. So I would probably go and get a really nice gun. Like a really nice gun. Like one, maybe one with a pearl handle.
I'm always worried about the guns, though, because if you...
Do it wrong.
Yeah, if you do it wrong and then you're just deformed, like missing an eyeball a portion of your skull.
The other thing I feel sorry for is like if I was to like off myself, I want to do it where no one's going to discover me other than medical personnel, because I feel that's also selfish. Like the way Sylvia Plath did it, you know, you lock your kids in a room, you leave a little note, you're off yourself, and then the neighbor comes around, rings the police. Like, you know, it's very minimal. I want the least amount of people being traumatized.
Well, couldn't you like schedule a phone call
yeah.
to the front desk at the hotel?
Yeah, I would do that. Or I'd be like, if you see my dog sat on the front porch at a particular time of the day.
Eating your fingers.
Ring the ambulance. Yeah, eat my fingers.
They would, you know. You know, I've often been partial to like jumping in front of a train.
No, because then
but
you're
that would be a spectacle and it would ruin people's commute. And I probably wouldn't do that. Also, yeah, I don't want like pieces of me like flying into someone's face while they're drinking a latte, you know, their morning coffee.
Yeah, you want to do it with the least amount of PTSD for other people. But again, people who commit suicide are very selfish, so they don't give a shit.
Well, also the least amount of pain. So I would probably go the Percocet and a bottle of good bourbon.
Again, though, you have to make sure you're taking a fucking lot.
Well, I would. I would get
otherwise, it's liver failure.
I mean, a lethal dose of Percocet doesn't take that many.
Is it, you know what I would probably do? I'd probably just go and get a bunch of fucking heroin / fentanyl and just...
Well, fentanyl for sure would do it.
Yeah, and just do that because that can't be that bad.
I mean, you could even get like... don't they have fentanyl liquid form?
Do they now? Oh, yeah, God, what so. Aren't they putting
put
fentanyl in?
You could put that in a bottle of Basil Hayden.
Yeah, and just have one last wild ride.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing.
You know what? I would rent out, what is it, Bungalow 33, where John Belushi, and it was just the anniversary of John Belushi's death. I would rent out that bungalow and just go in there, go out the Belushi way.
You know what I would probably do? Break into Graceland and go out on Elvis's toilet.
Oh my God, this Elvis the second.
But one thing for certain, I would never self-immolate.
No.
Why the fuck would you do that?
It's an idiotic thing.
Could you
to
imagine?
Do.
It's got to be the most drastic form of suicide and definitely the most painful.
It's like what a drama queen would choose to do.
Well, either a drama queen or someone who's making a point. And driving
Same
that point
difference.
Home in as drastic of a way as possible. So I'm referring to active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, Aaron Bushnell, who killed himself on February 26 via self-immolation. He set himself ablaze outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. You know, he was only 25 years old.
Yeah,
young guy. Yeah, young guy. And the worst part about it, he was almost out of the military. Did 4 years.
Yeah, he was about to get his fucking
pension
for life.
Yeah, you get your military pension. They'll pay for school. It's like kind of cut your life short there, dude.
You know my favorite fact about this whole thing, though? He didn't even have this idea. He's like a fucking poser. Because a woman the week before went and did the exact same thing.
Not a week before, but in December. But this woman didn't die.
Which is awful.
I also don't think she live streamed it. Like, he did it right.
At least to draw attention to the cause. Yeah, no, you're right there.
So at around 1 p.m. last Sunday, Sunday, February 26th, he walked up to the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., and then began live streaming on Twitch. And I love how Twitch allows that to be played, yet Harrison just, you know, takes a knife up and down his wrist singing To Sir With Love, and we get banned for 6 months.
I think he was bandy, but like he's also dead, so they're like, might as well just
I don't think he cared.
Let's delete his account, lads.
Well, law enforcement officials said that he set his phone down, and then he doused himself with an accelerant and ignited the flames. At one point, he said he'll no longer be complicit in genocide. And then he was yelling, Free Palestine. The video was later removed from the Twitch platform, not before, I don't know, how many of our Sick and Wrong listeners sent it to us.
Yes, thank you to everyone. Thank you. I think it was Wasky who found it. Yeah.
At least 20 were just like sending me that directly via email. So this week, we're going to chat about the history of suicide by fire, the psychology behind it, and we're even going to get into spontaneous combustion.
Yeah.
Yeah. A less planned form of death by fire. Because the question is, does that even really happen?
You'll have to find out.
Well, before we get into that, we're going to chat about a cause well worth immolating yourself.
Yes.
The Sick and Wrong Patron.
It's hot over there. Full of hot people.
I'm sure if we ever stop the podcast and ended the Sick and Wrong second show, I'm sure there'd be quite a fair few that would self-immolate.
What is that? Episode 1000? It's coming up.
We'll see.
Get the petrol stocks up, people.
If you look forward to listening to this podcast every Monday, then all we ask is for you to sign up for the Sick Wrong Patron or Apple Podcast and do your part to support the show. It's only $5 a month. We're not asking for a lot. You know, we do this every week, and this money directly goes into supporting the show. But you get something in return. It's not just a donation. You get access to Sick and Wrong Second Show, a full hour and a half second show that we do every week. This week, we play the second part of the interview with my old friend and former strip club bouncer, Big Jeff. And we get into some of the more violent fights, the graphic fights that took place at the club. And he shares one of my favorite stories about DJ Dan. One of my colleagues, how DJ Dan lost his front teeth, and it's not how you'd expect. It really isn't.
No, it's gross.
$5 a month, that's all it costs. You get access to Sick and Wrong Patron, and you get to join up for the Sick and Wrong Discord. A lovely place to spend a Thursday afternoon. You can also go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to Second Show that way. A couple different ways to support the show. I also have the first 6 years of Sick and Wrong on Apple Podcasts as well. Just do a search for Sick and Wrong and then subscribe to the archives. Patreon.com/Sick and Wrong. We do appreciate the support. So let me play this quick promo and then let's chat about being a fire starter, a twisted fire starter.
Hi guys, Stuart here. I'm just calling in to get this off my chest. All you listeners out there, why are you not signing up for the Patreon? Seriously, these two fine people do the show next to having a regular job, and you don't feel the need to support them. So sign up to the Patreon today. You're not helping a Jew through college, but through his midlife crisis. And Kate is packing her shit to live in California. Both of these things are not cheap. They give so much and ask for so little. So do it now and keep the show going. Dee and Kate, you're doing a great job. Love you guys. Stuart out.
So prior to lighting himself on fire, Bushnell made sure to identify himself as a member of the U.S. Air Force who was going to engage in an extreme act of protest. And he was saying this like as he, because you watched the video too.
Yeah.
He was saying this as he was walking up to the front of the embassy and was about to light himself on fire. He said, I will no longer be complicit in genocide. And then as he doused himself in the flammable liquid and lit himself on fire, he kept screaming, Free Palestine. And then he ignited himself. And he, of course, died from his injuries.
You
later,
know,
though.
I must say that even though I do think like suicide of sissies, he stood up for a long time.
Like, yeah, considering. I was surprised because you're wondering, like, when's this guy going to fall?
Yeah, that's what I was like. If I'd have been a betting man on it, I would have lost.
Well, because, you know, that famous monk.
Yeah, he's sitting all comfy.
But he was sitting down, you know, he was sitting down like almost meditating. Whereas Aaron was just kind of sort of walking back and forth, covered in flames for at least like, I'd say a good 20 seconds.
Yeah, longer than 30 seconds. Think.
Yeah. But so self-immolation has to be a painful way to go.
Fuck yeah.
I've read that the pain is greatest in the beginning, before the flame, you know, burns through your nerves. After that, the burned skin doesn't really hurt. Most victims die quickly from suffocation because the hot gases damage their respiratory tract. But there are some who actually survive the burning and then usually die within days later because their lungs, their alveoli, fill with fluid, and they end up dying of pulmonary edema. Now, some people actually do end up surviving it, and then they just look like, you know, kind of monstrous.
Burnt face man. Katie Piper.
Who?
Everyone in Britain thinks I'm disgusting right now for what I just said. Just Google her later. Katie Piper, who, as my ex said, fit body would just put a bag on her head. And a lot of people.
Wait, wasn't her body all crispy?
No, she was a victim. Like, there was a lot of acid attacks. Oh,
an acid is completely different.
It's a burn.
It's a burn, but it's different than lighting yourself on fire.
Well, yeah, but it's still a burn. But anyways, she's probably one of the most famous burn victim survivors. And then that other dude from the Falklands in Britain.
I mean, you look like Frank from Hellraiser. It's not a way to go. That's why I'm like, and that's the thing. I mean, you could survive this.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, it's got to be the most painful experience you've ever had. Yet you might survive it, and you got to live with that.
What about drinking bleach, though? Which is more painful? Because I think drinking bleach might be just as painful.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But in the process of being burned to death, the body experiences burns to exposed tissue, changes in content and distribution of body fluid, fixation of tissue, and shrinkage of the skin.
Yeah.
Internal organs may also be shrunken due to fluid loss. Shrinkage and contraction of the muscles cause joints to flex and the body to adopt the pugilistic stance, like the boxer stance, with the elbows and knees flexed and the fists clenched, which Aaron definitely had that.
He definitely.
If you watch the video.
Yeah.
Shrinkage of the skin around the neck may be severe enough to even strangle a victim.
Oh, wow.
Fluid shifts, especially in the skull and the hollow organs of the abdomen, can cause pseudo-hemorrhages in the form of heat hematomas. And the organic matter of the body is then consumed as fuel by a fire. The cause of death is usually, as I mentioned before, pulmonary edema. But it's got to be painful. You know, it's interesting. Complete cremation is only achieved under extreme circumstances.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And over a long period of time.
You got to be in an oven for that.
Yeah. Your people would know all about that.
And that was, I'm sure, was painful. So after that shocking event occurred, obviously it made headlines, but news reports, I would say mostly from conservative news outlets, started trying to figure out why he would do this.
Well, he's a mentalist.
Well, a lot of them characterized him as an anarchist and a former member of a Christian cult, as well as referencing, you know, different episodes of mental distress.
Yeah.
That he had leading up to his suicide. You know, I would say more the liberal newspapers tended to avoid that. But yeah, they also weren't characterizing him as a martyr or a hero as some other news outlets tended to do that. The Washington Post spoke with some people who described his upbringing on a religious compound in Orleans, Massachusetts, run by a Benedictine monastic religious group called the Community of Jesus.
Right, okay.
I mean, this is weird. The church, I wouldn't say it's a cult, but it's definitely a weird Christian sect. And the church has a bit of a darker side. There was a lawsuit in Canada brought by former students where they claimed that officials, they had a lawsuit against officials of the religious group. These officials, the students said, ran a charismatic sect that created an environment of control, intimidation, and humiliation that fostered and inflicted enduring harms on students. You know, it sounds a lot like the military.
It does. And also, I'm pretty sure it's the Benedictine monks that make Bullfast, and all of that last part about being humiliated and not feeling very well the next day and being bullied. That's everything that happens to you when you spend a night on the bookie.
Oh, well, definitely humiliated.
Oh, yeah.
The school and the church denied all allegations, but an appeals court last year awarded the students $8 million.
There you go. There's the answer.
So, I mean, there you go. A member of the church who, Susan Wilkins, who left in 2005, and she said Bushnell was still a member at the time, told the Post that it was common for members of the Community of Jesus to join the military because you go from one high control group to another.
Yeah. And it's an easy job if you've been like, because do they even go to normal school? They won't go to normal school.
No, I think you're like segregated from society.
Yeah.
And you're kind of immersed within this like teachings of this sect.
Yeah. So it's an easy job to get.
So, I mean, I definitely could see how this could definitely influence your thought, your behavior. However, from what also I read that he was in this sect and he got out of it like years ago.
Yeah. But if you've spent your adolescent years, your entire life in this, there's no way you're coming out of that unscathed without major therapy.
I would say that's probably true, but I don't know how much that influenced this drastic act.
I would say there's probably a little sprinkling.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll think about monks love to set themselves on fire for God.
Well, they do, but they do it also for extreme political protests as well.
Some monks, yeah.
So we mentioned before that there was another protester of the Israel-Gaza war who set herself on fire at the Israeli consulate in Atlanta back in December. She did sustain critical burn injuries, but she survived.
Ugh, that's the worst. At least, yeah. Like, make sure you go out. I am a true 90s children, D. And there's one episode of ER. Did you ever watch ER? I loved
it. I haven't
ER.
Really watched it.
Noah Wiley. I wanted to grow up and marry Noah Wiley with his big-ass nose. So I've kind of got half of that. But anyways, there's an episode where a woman is in like a really bad car crash and she comes in and she's got 90-degree burns all over her body. And they can't save her. She's going to die. So all they're doing is like spending the episode making sure she's comfortable and talking to her as she fucking dies. And it's like watching a chicken nugget just lose all its energy.
See, I would just be like, just give me some fentanyl.
I think that's kind of what they do.
Come on.
I mean, that's
dude.
What they do in real life. They have to.
They should if they have any mercy. So 2 weeks before he self-immolated, Bushnell and a friend spoke by phone about what sacrifices were needed for them to be effective as anarchists.
Oh, so we should go into Columbine on Hitler's birthday. We'll plant a couple of bombs. That's a sacrifice. And then, you know, we'll just kill everyone. Then we'll kill ourselves at the end. Deal.
Well, the friend said he didn't mention anything particularly violent or self-sacrificial during the call. But the fact that he was saying, you know, we need to, you know, have certain sacrifices are necessary for us to be anarchists, that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah, I would say red flag.
He might be heading down a path of self-harm.
Yes.
Like, I don't know why he didn't call his family. And on Sunday morning, you know, hours before setting himself on fire, he was texting a friend who is not named to protect his anonymity. He said, I hope you'll understand. I love you. This doesn't even make sense, but I feel like I'm going to miss you. He then sent this friend a copy of his will. And in the will, he gave his pet cat to a neighbor and I guess root beers in his fridge to his friend.
That's all he had. 25 years of living.
Makes me wonder, like, question his mental state at that time.
That's what I mean. He's suicidal. He's like Dylan Klebold. He's suicidal.
Well, his actions definitely denote someone who is in a lot of mental distress.
Yes.
And capable of inflicting self-harm. So, I mean, at this point, I'd be questioning, like, well, this is interesting. The other thing I find kind of interesting about this, too, is they don't really mention the sex of his friend.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they don't mention what the cat was called. Mittens.
That is completely irrelevant.
Can we call the cat Mittens and say Mittens is fine and is living a happy life now?
Why don't we call the cat Crispy?
Oh, Crispy. I would. I'd rename
Little Crispy.
It. Little Crispus.
But no, what I'm saying is they don't really say or specify the gender of the person he was saying I love you to. So was it a woman?
It feels like a text.
Was it a man?
It feels more like a text you would send to a bloke.
I mean, he left the root beers to the bloke. So makes me wonder. I mean, Was he possibly a self-loathing homosexual?
Yeah, could be.
Could he have been an incel? And he's upset about that.
He 100% has incel energy.
Maybe. I think there might have been some mental health issues that might have not have been addressed here. But you wonder why someone would do this. Why would someone commit such a drastic form of suicide? So self-immolation means suicide by fire, but the etymology connotes sacrifice.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so it's been used as a form of protest through the act of suicide for thousands of years. You know, in the East and the West, including ancient Greece, 4th century China, 17th century Russia, you know, 20th century Europe. So 1963, the self-immolation of Thet Quang Duc in protest of the U.S. support of South Vietnamese government's persecution of Buddhists during the Vietnam War is probably the most recognized act of self-immolation ever.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you know, it horrified JFK, prompted several copycat suicides in Vietnam and around the world, including in the U.S. And not only that, Duke's act was immortalized in the iconic photo that appeared on the cover of Rage Against the Machine's debut album 30 years later. That's right. A claim to fame.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine. They really put him on the map.
Makes me wonder whose album Bushnell will be on.
No one's album.
You never know.
No one's.
You never know. Maybe the new Roger Waters record.
Oh, or the new Brian Eno.
Yeah, possibly. He might. Actually, I bet you Brian Eno recognizes him as a martyr.
Yeah.
So over the past few decades, self-immolation has become more frequent and I would say impactful than we ever thought. You know, in 2001, several people set themselves on fire during the Tiananmen Square protest in Beijing. More than 160 Tibetans have set themselves ablaze since 2009 to bring attention to the oppression from being ruled by China.
I don't blame them. Plus, also, I would like to have a side point here and say that Tibetan curry is really, really tasty. So don't all of you kill each other. Kill yourselves. Don't.
But yeah, those are monks. Monks are the type that I would think of. Those are the type, if they you know, commit suicide by fire, I'm like, it kind of makes sense. Those guys can meditate through it and do it. But when you see like a 25-year-old American doing this.
Plus, they're also religious. It's like a bit different. They're already nut jobs because I think anyone who's embroiled in a religion that tightly, you've got to have a screw loose in your head. So,
well, Bushnell was part of a Christian cult.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
same diff.
Say what you will. In 2010, Mohamed Bouazizi, his self-immolation kind of started the Tunisian Revolution, the wider Arab Spring movement. That was a very famous self-immolation.
Tunisia, as the rest of the world says it.
In 2016 and 2019, U.S. military veterans Charles Richard Ingram III and John Watts committed suicide by fire to protest the treatment they received through the Department of Veterans Affairs. So there's a couple Americans there. David Bukel in 2018 set himself on fire in Brooklyn's Prospect Park in support of LGBTQ rights.
Jesus
and
Christ.
Climate change activism.
My God, these people are mental. There's something wrong.
It's typically performed in a symbolic public setting. So the fact that Bushnell did it in front of the Israeli embassy right in the middle of the afternoon, he knew people were going to see that. It often has a clear social purpose, includes attracting support to a cause, much like the Israeli-Gaza war, and strengthening the resolve of a resistance group, namely here, the Palestinians. Consequently, self-immolation has been called an ultimate act of despair and defiance, as well as heroic self-sacrifice.
There's nothing heroic about it. This is what I don't. It's just not heroic because I don't think you can view suicide on different levels. And I think the minute that you start saying, "Oh no, his suicide, that was for something else. That was different." Like, then what? So now we all have to view suicide as it's fine. Nobody ring a suicide hotline anymore. Jump off the Golden Gate Bridge because someone out there will be like, "You know what? He self-sacrificed himself for his cat Crispy."
But this guy was self-sacrificing for a cause, and that's why a lot of people consider him to be a martyr. But as you were saying there, it should also be understood as a form of suicide.
Well,
I mean, he's ending his life.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a bit of both. It might be about, you know, as much about sympathy and outrage as it is about self-loathing. And so it's a, you know, it's as much as a form of political protest as a desire for martyrdom, or maybe an end to personal suffering, or even a cry to help. Like, we don't know what was going on with Bushnell's mental state at that time. Maybe some of his friends will come forward. I haven't really seen much in the media, you know, since then, except for a lot of the hit pieces and like the New York Post and whatnot. But I mean, he was definitely showing signs that he was heading towards self-harm.
The only
writing the will, contacting his friends, saying, I'm going to miss you. Like, these are red flags.
The only like type of suicide that I kind of give any like form of softness or empathy towards is, say, like Hunter S. Thompson or Robin Williams. If you hear you've got a very terminal and horrible, deadly
terminal
disease.
Terminal illness, yeah.
You're just like, I'm going to take myself out on my own terms. And then I've got, you know, kind of a bit of like, good for you, because I would probably try and do the same thing. But this is just, it's like Dylan Klebold. It just makes me angry.
Well, Dylan Klebold was a mass murderer. This guy's
murderer. No. Dylan Klebold was somebody who wanted to commit suicide, and he got swept
and
into
as well
the
as mass
yeah,
murder.
Yeah, and became a mass murderer. But
I mean, you're the only person that lionizes this guy. Dylan Klebold is not a hero.
No, when did I ever say that? Klebold's a hero.
You bring it up and you acknowledge the events. And I do think you do respect him on some level.
How do I respect Dylan Klebold? I respect Eric Harris.
You
I don't respect
both
Dylan.
You respect both
Dylan's
of them.
Dylan's a little sissy pussy boy.
You
he
respect
has a pussy.
Both of them because you bring it up. But the fact of the matter, they were mass murderers. Yes, they committed suicide. That's understood, but they were mass murderers. Aaron Bushnell wasn't a mass murderer. I mean, he was dying for a cause. Whether or not, I mean, that's a valid way to go. I mean, it's up to him. I definitely think there was mental illness there. So a 2011 study found a potentially high rate of mental illness among those who sustained injuries for self-inflicted burns that were not limited to just acts of protest. And this was a wide range of like 18 to 92% of samples. Within lower income country, there's a much greater rate of self-immolation compared to higher income countries. And in these countries, most self-immolators are more likely to be younger women without mental illness, who are revolting against or seeking to escape from political and social oppression or even domestic abuse.
Yeah, I get that. And plus, it's cheap, isn't it? Because you can always probably find an accelerant, whereas you're not necessarily going to find a gun or a knife or like pills.
Well, you don't. Yeah, you. I mean, it's obviously more difficult to find a gun. And then just, you know, it's just easier to do this. I mean, this is household items. And I imagine it's maybe a little bit more palatable than drinking bleach.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of, like, especially the women who are trapped in domestic, horrible, shitty circumstances will probably just snap and be like, I'm going to do it. You hear me, Gerald? I'm going to do it.
Well, I think they're also making a point. I mean, it's an act of defiance to their husband who's abusing them.
And then they have to live with, like, if they survive, a crispy wife.
Self-immolation is particularly common in the Middle East, where as many as 70% of suicides occur by death by fire.
It's just the popular way to do it there, darling.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little lower income. So I think for the most part, I mean, obviously not in like, I'm sure like cities like Dubai.
I was about to say. Yeah,
I mean, they're probably not, or Saudi Arabia, they're not doing it there. But I think in other areas of the Middle East, it's actually a very common way to go. There's a study published in 2018 that found 5,717 cases of self-immolation in Iran, with a mean age of around 27 years, including 70% who were women.
Wow.
And of those 70%, only 20% had mental illness.
Yeah, because they're trapped in a shitty situation.
A recent review of studies published between 2020-2022 found a similar female predominance amongst self-immolators in Iraq. For these women, you know, it's an act of political protest against oppression, and I would say a personal escape for most of them.
Well, yeah, if you can't even go to school, you can't even drive a car. What kind of life are you living?
I mean, I think this is the ultimate form of protest. In higher income countries, self-immolation is much less common and occurs more often among men with a history of mental illness.
Yeah.
Or men who have had previous suicide attempts. Or, you know, it could occur because of like financial difficulties or even like divorce.
Mm-hmm. Stress.
And typically it's men in these cases. You know, the number of cases of self-immolation in Europe over the past 50 years can be counted on the fingers of one hand. But most involve people with severe mental illness. The only exception, though, is the Czech Republic, which has had a sad tradition of self-immolation since it was used as a form of political protests by philosophy student Jan Pollock in January 1969. People say his act is described as the most drastic suicide of the 20th century, but I'm sure that Buddhist monk would probably disagree. Pollock burned himself 5 months after the Soviet army occupied Czechoslovakia. In his case, it was a rational decision that could not be explained by personal problems. But it was a different time. You know, media was censored. Live TV broadcasting, there's no Twitch. So there's no other way, you know, for people to really draw attention to something. So he wanted to shake people up, you know, make them notice this cause. He wanted to force people to learn about it. You know, I don't think that's the thing with Bushnell. I mean, I don't know why he was dissatisfied with just protesting in the street and just regular forms of activism.
Well, because he's got a mental illness.
Well, it makes you wonder, you know.
Where in the Czech Republic did this guy set himself on fire?
Prague.
Oh, was it Prague? Yeah. Beautiful Prague.
His death caused a domino effect. Another 26 people attempted to kill themselves in the same way in 4 months after Pollock's death. 7 of them succeeded, and all but 2 did so for completely personal reasons. Pollock didn't die from the actual, well, he did die from consequences of the burning, but he didn't die actually as soon as he immolated. He lay dying in the hospital for days.
Ugh.
He could talk, he could think, but he could not breathe. And so one of his followers, Jan Zajac, chose a more sophisticated act to ensure that he died instantly. He stripped naked, smeared his body with a flammable parquet polish. I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's some kind of shoe polish or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then he drank a corrosive substance to stop himself from screaming.
Whoa.
And then he poured petrol over himself and set himself on fire.
That is
determination.
That's brutal determination. I like the combining of the two here. Like, you're going to drink your bleach and then you're going to set yourself on fire. And then imagine if you could...
And you're covered in this, like, flammable shoe polish.
What are the two household goods where if you mix them together, it creates napalm? It's like bleach... And
is paraffin?
Is it hydrochloric acid or something? Not hydrochloric. Is it a different acid?
I've never actually made napalm.
That's what I would do, right? I would look up the ingredients of napalm. I would swallow them. Then I would set myself on fire.
Yeah, but then...
And you are a living napalm
bomb. But then you might
bomb.
Be a suicide bomber.
No, I'm just... I definitely want to make sure that I die.
But if you did that in your house, you're going to blow up the house, maybe kill some other
people.
Oh, no,
people. Because you don't self-immolate in the house. You have It's a spectacle event. It's like a guillotine.
Yeah, but
you have to have a crowd.
If you did it that way, though, you might actually explode and, you know, burn other people.
Yeah, but these people don't care when they set themselves on fire. They don't care about other people. Because
I would want to guarantee death. So a recent study of 103 cases of self-immolation attributed both suicide and non-suicidal self-injury that were treated in Arizona at the Arizona Burn Center, this is around 2015, included 71% men, and 83% of those men had a psychiatric illness.
Yeah.
So these cases did not appear to represent any act of political protest.
Do you not think, though, that especially since the 60s and from now, mental health and mental health awareness has gotten so, like, way better, though?
I mean, it has definitely it's definitely diagnosed on a grander level now. But I mean, but at the same time, it's like, it's obviously not swaying people from lighting themselves on fire.
Yeah, but it's like the death penalty doesn't stop people from murdering either.
So I guess, what do these studies say about the mental health of Bushnell or the woman who lit herself on fire back in December? Not really. I mean, we don't really know much about it. You know, the rates of mental illness definitely seem to be, you know, a higher percentage of men that done it in, you know, higher income countries, which he was. But it is kind of variable. I mean, there aren't that many high rates of mental disorder amongst the women in the Middle East who kill themselves.
There's probably like one psychiatrist in all of Iran right now.
Which is true, because the presence or absence of a formally diagnosed mental illness doesn't really say much about their mental health.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of those women in Iraq probably weren't diagnosed by a professional psychiatrist.
No.
And who knows? I mean, maybe there were... We don't really know if there are significant mental health issues affecting Bushnell that caused him to commit suicide in this way. But it's just curious that he was so dissatisfied with the regular ways to protest a war that you're not immediately connected to. Like, he wasn't Palestinian. I don't know if he had Palestinian friends. I'm not sure. But, I mean, you'd think he could protest how everybody else is doing it, through political activism, attending rallies. You know, these people are outraged by this foreign conflict.
I think someone on the Discord put it best when they said, I've never been this fired up about anything in my entire... And, like, that's how I feel, too. Like, I'll get on my soapbox and shout at people about certain things, but I would never then be like, do you know what, to prove a point about why this is the best Ramones album, I'm going to set myself on fire. End of the century! Like, do you know what I mean? I would never, ever do that over anything, because it just comes to a point where you're like, you know what, fuck it, I can't be arsed. Can't be arsed, mate.
I mean, my whole thing, I don't think I've ever really given a shit about anything
yeah.
that caused me to sacrifice myself.
Yeah,
like, I don't think there's any cause I hold dear enough to end my life.
Especially not something that's happening on t'other side of world, like...
I'm Gen X. I don't care about anything.
Well, millennials don't either.
But that's the thing, though. I mean, what made him feel that he had to sacrifice himself in such a horrific fashion for this cause?
He was obviously lonely.
Well, I mean, the fact that he says that he doesn't want to be complicit in genocide, you know, makes me think that there's some kind of guilt or maybe a moral injury because of his, you know, Air Force, his service in the Air Force.
I feel bad for his cat. Who is probably really super cute, little Crispy, who I imagine is Ginger.
There's been reports in the Washington Post that said he had very few social ties. He described himself as finding social interactions very challenging.
Is he on the spectrum?
There's another thing he could be on the spectrum here. I mean, he wrote the will. He left his cat to a neighbor, as well as that refrigerator full of root beer.
Does it say what brand the root beer is?
Doesn't say that.
I feel
it's about as relevant as the cat's name.
No, excuse me.
No, it is.
The cat's name is very relevant.
About as relevant as the type of root beer.
Well, I mean, it could be a really shitty off-brand of root beer. And imagine if you got left that. You'd be like, I don't want this. You'd have to throw it away, pour it down
the
sink.
Would you even drink your dead friend's root beer?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I don't like root beer anyway. But it makes me wonder if his suicide by fire is, you know, equal parts a desire to stop the killing in Gaza, as well as a desire to stop himself from living.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And we really will never know. I mean, unless more facts come out. But speaking for all those who endured that video, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners did, Bushnell definitely did not spontaneously combust.
He didn't.
No, that was premeditated.
So this episode has actually unlocked a deep, very irrational childhood fear that I've had. That I had. And I suppose I still kind of do. And that is spontaneous combustion.
Why would you be worried about that?
So I'm pretty sure that it's come from, I was obsessed with unsolved mysteries when I was a kid. And a lot of that made me scared. Like, I was scared of aliens throughout pretty much all of my childhood. So I'm scared of, because there was a lot of spontaneous combustion on unsolved mysteries.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I also read the Charles Dickens book Bleak House, and there's a very grisly death of the boozy character Crook in that. Do you remember?
Wait, he spontaneously combusts?
Yeah, when he's absolutely hammered.
I don't remember that.
And that it's like a really scary part of that book as well. I really remember that. And then I also have an encyclopedia set that my dad had, and now I have, and it's called Library of the Curious and Unusual Facts. And this is kind of like Sick and Wrong if it was an encyclopedia. It's like,
maybe we should make a Sick and Wrong encyclopedia.
Oh, that'd be good. Everyone buys books these days. We'd sell millions of them.
You know, I was always worried, not necessarily about self-combustion, like, or spontaneous combustion. I wasn't really too worried about that. But I was always concerned when I'd see, like, friends light a fart.
Oh.
Because your body's filled with gas. What's to stop that, you know, flame from, like, blowing you up?
I'm going to get into the science a little bit.
Yeah, I was worried. I didn't worry about spontaneously combusting. I wasn't concerned about that. But I never lit a fart on fire because I was worried that it might just blow up my lower intestine.
I never had farts good enough to light on fire. But my friend Marsha, who is very fecally talented, she could do it, and she did it a lot.
It's a really sexy thing for the woman.
It could do that. Yeah. So in this encyclopedia book, right, there's an article And it includes the very famous picture, the last remains of this Pennsylvanian physician, John Bentley, who mysteriously caught fire on December the 5th, 1966. All that's found of him was a slippered foot and ashes. And then, like, it's an otherwise untouched and very tidy bathroom. It's a famous picture.
Wait, ashes in the, like, shape of a human body?
No, it's just like a pile of ashes. It looks like a little dirty, and then there's just a slippered foot. And I would probably, like, because I was a spooky kid, I definitely looked through all of these, and I looked at it, and I just thought, yeah, I don't want that to happen to me, and it could happen because it's spontaneous, so I'm going to die by spontaneous combustion.
I mean, kids are irrational, so I could see that, but yeah, that would freak me out.
But the most famous case that people will know about is of widower Mary Hardy Reeser. So she'd already taken her sleeping pills and she was dressed for bed by 9 p.m. on January the 1st, 1951 in her apartment, which is located at 1200 Cherry Street in the exclusive northeast section of St. Petersburg, Florida. I don't think there is an exclusive section of St. Petersburg, Florida anymore, but the apartment still stands. I was Google street mapping it and looking at it. At the time, it's described as thoroughly modern. Each apartment had a living room, an electric kitchen, two twin bed bedrooms, tile baths, a garage. And at the time, all the units were vacant apart from Mary's and the landlady's. So the landlady is called Pansy Carpenter.
Oh, Pansy. That's great.
Isn't it a great fucking name? And she's actually married to Mary's physician's son, Dr. Richard Reeser Jr. And her husband, who is dead, Mary's husband, was also a doctor. So doctors are in the family.
Hmm.
She had just finished having a cup of sleepy time racist tea with Pansy. And Pansy said goodnight. So overweight, chain-smoking Mary, who had swallowed a handful of dolls to help ensure a very restful sleep that night. She was sitting, resting in an armchair. She's facing the window. She's wearing a ray gun nightgown. She's in her cotton house coat, satin bedroom slippers.
She lit a fart.
It's a really hot outfit, isn't it? It's kind of like what I'm dressed like right now. At around 5 a.m. on Monday, July the 2nd, Pansy was woken up. She heard the sound of a dull foot coming from like the wall next door. She told investigators that it sounded like a door closing. So she gets up, she looks around, she doesn't see anything crazy. So she makes her way back to bed. As she kind of gets, she went outside to look. So as she goes back to her apartment, she thought she could smell smoke. So she goes into her garage and she turns off like the electricity meter that had been causing her problems anyway. So she thought maybe it's that. An hour later at 6 a.m., she gets back up to go out and get the paper. And she thought it was strange that Mary was not up because Mary kept a very close schedule and Mary would listen to the radio from 6 a.m. So Pansy said at the time that she didn't see or smell any smoke. She didn't think anything's weird. It's just like, oh, my like mother-in-law's not awake yet.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So after a Western Union messenger failed to get a response, she goes to the apartment. She tries to go inside, but the doorknob was too hot to grasp. So she flags down a couple of house painters and they like shoulder their way into the apartment. It's like Dan getting into Al's bedroom when he's suffering with kidney stones and Deadwood. I'm watching Deadwood at the minute. It's great.
That is an obscure reference, but okay.
So there on the spot where hours before Mary had been, they find a pile of greasy ashes, a shrunken skull, a very charred liver, a piece of spine, and a foot in a slipper.
She was vaporized.
Yeah, and she's kind of in some heat and roided coil springs. So a 175-pound woman had apparently been reduced to 10 piles of ash, and the rest of the apartment had barely suffered any damage at all.
You know what this is?
What?
This is if I was like a detective, like a forensic psychologist or psychiatrist or whatever that was coming in here and looking at the scene, a forensic investigator, not psychiatrist, but if I was on the scene just kind of doing some forensic investigation, I would say Jewish space laser.
I agree. Direct.
That's the first thing
woman.
I would think.
Me too. You've solved the case. You're going to get a medal for something in this police department. So about 4 feet above the floor, there was oily soot covered the curtains, walls, and ceiling. A mirror had cracked from the intense heat, but newspapers and linens near her remains, they were untouched. And the switch that was nearest to where Mary had been was completely melted but not working. An electric clock in the room had stopped at 4:20 a.m., but when it was plugged in at Pansy's apartment, it worked totally fine.
4:20, so, bro.
Yeah, bro.
That's what was happening.
Maybe she was blazing in more ways than one.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. different theories began to spread about the cause of the fire. One of the more prominent was that Mary had been struck by lightning. Shortly after her death, right, police received an unsigned letter that was addressed to the chief of detectives, all spelt wrong, but just all of it. Imagine every word spelt wrong in any way that can be.
Yeah, by design.
It said, a ball of fire came through the open window and hit her. I seen it happen. He's a liar. He didn't see this happen. And another theory was that her body must have been soaked in ether or alcohol.
Well, was she a drinker?
She was like no more a drinker. Like, I'm probably more a drinker than Mary.
But even then, like, what's she drinking? Like Bacardi 151?
I don't have Bacardi. What, is that just white Bacardi?
No, like that's, you know, whenever they make drinks of Bacardi and light it on fire, it's always 151.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's not what Dennis Nielsen was giving his lads. He was just giving them white Bacardi.
Yeah. I don't know if that's flammable or not.
The police contacted the company that manufactured the chair to be like, so what the fuck's in your chair? And they were told that it's stuffed with sterilized cotton batting. And a Tampa Tribune reporter, they checked Mary's medicine cabinet and they just found standard digestive aids, like nothing crazy in her cabinet. That's what you should always do when you go to somebody's house, is look through their medicine cabinet and just take one pill or two pills.
She should have got some Ozempic.
She should have. She was 175 pounds.
I was about to say.
It's like pretty hefty.
She might not have burned up.
All the possible angles were explored, but everyone's a bit like, what the fuck's happened here? Her remains were released pretty quickly, but her death certificate was unsigned. J. Edgar Hoover actually steps in at this point into investigating Mary's death. So the chief of police specifically requested that the FBI provide any information or theories into how a human body could be so destroyed and the fire contained to such a small area with so little damage done to the building and the furniture in the room.
That is weird, but I'm sure the bed must have had like burn marks.
No, she was in a chair.
Oh, in a chair. But the chair, yes. Was it like, I'm picturing like a nuclear fallout scene, like just your body, kind of the imprint of your body and just ashes.
A bit like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. On July the 31st, 1951, the long-awaited FBI report was released.
Space lasers.
Well, no accelerants were found, so okay. It could have been a laser. The greasy substance was body fat, so she's exploded.
Well, that makes sense.
They stated the lack of widespread damage in the apartment was most likely due to the fire smoldering rather than burning. Like as if you just got hit with a laser and you eviscerated,
yeah, but
and then you smoldered.
What ignited the fire? Like what ignited the flame?
We'll get to that. The hot air, they say the hot air rose from her and it formed a lair, which never came into contact with the items below the 4 feet level. So that's why there was a little char mark on the ceiling, but nothing else, apart from where she'd been sitting.
She totally lit a fart. She totally did, 100%. I'm retracting my space laser comment. She lit a fart.
The FBI believed that a piece of metal found near the remains of the body was most likely the remains of a cigarette lighter. So the final result of the report was that she had most likely accidentally lit herself on fire while she was smoking the cigarette.
Well, now that can happen, though, because a lot of people pass out while smoking.
Steve Marriott is the most famous.
Who passed out while smoking?
Rest in peace, Steve Marriott, yeah.
That's the thing. So a lot of people die that way. So that could have happened.
Yeah, but I'm an ex-smoker. You're an ex-smoker. I've like dropped cigarettes on myself and you just like you get, you know, hot rocks. You just pick it up and you're like,
yeah, but
carry
you don't
on.
Know. You don't know what the chair was made of. Maybe it was like some kind of flammable material.
Cotton batting. So it wasn't as flammable as any other chair.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was old. Maybe it just, you know, ignited.
So her death was listed as accidental, although it is curious how often this happens. And this is where the kind of like spookiness comes from. So she's not alone. There are more than 100 reported and documented cases of bodies inexplicably consumed by fire, a.k.a. spontaneous human combustion.
Wow.
All the victims share similar traits, which kind of only deepens the mystery. They're usually overweight, elderly. And they usually are kind of boozers. There's a bit of booze involved with these people.
Well, booze can be flammable.
Yeah. It's a tendency of booze, isn't it?
Yep.
The fires that are alleged to consume them are described as flickering, pale blue flames that destroy mainly the torso and the head, leaving the limbs uncharred, which is the exact opposite of what happens in a normal burning. Like we saw that video of Aaron, he just went up like Guy Fawkes.
Well, he also doused himself in some kind of accelerant.
So in the 19th century, they theorized that the flames erupted out of alcohol and body fat, burning like a type of human meat candle, or it was generated from flammable gases from the intestines.
There you go.
So a human fart candle.
This woman totally lit a fart. Probably, you know, accidentally, like inadvertently, she probably dropped a cigarette, ripped a fart at the same time. Boom. Boom.
This is called the Wick effect, the John Wick effect. Basically, after a person has caught fire, they are kept burning from their own body fat. The clothing on the body acts as a kind of wick, sort of like an inside-out candle. But because it's normally a slow burn, nothing else other than items in the immediate area are affected. But the human body is mostly salt water, so it's really hard to burn unless you burn the body at intense high heats. So this kind of, this theory doesn't like make any sense. Yeah,
this one isn't really panning out.
Some people say it could be static electricity that triggers it, but there is no evidence that a human being could build up such a high charge and not completely trash the entire surroundings. Because people can build up charges.
Well, think of the friction between her thighs while she was moving.
Moving doing what, dear?
Just walking.
She was sitting down. No, are you saying she was wanking herself to death?
No, I'm just saying maybe she was like, you know, got up to go get her cigarette lighter and she was walking, sat on the chair. All this friction caused a spark.
Boom.
Next thing you know, and all the gas.
This is a good theory, is that it's in isotol. So this is a carbolic sugar that the body produces on the daily. It's vitamin B10. It's a compound that has the stability akin to nitroglycerin. And it does. And in fact, today, inositol nitrate is used in many modern explosives and like solid rocket propellants. And some sofa scientists say that this could be a trigger for spontaneous human combustion.
Well, I mean, that's an accelerant.
The body makes this phosphate potassium compound as a supplementary energy supply to be tapped if it runs low on glucose. So sedentary people, such as the elderly and the overweight, they might be likely to produce a bit more inositol, although it doesn't really store up in your body and we actually piss it out on the daily. It's vitamin B10.
Yeah, I think that's reaching.
It is reaching. So in the FBI case on Mary, forensic anthropologist Wilton Krogman, he discounted this in his experiments and he reproduced the death in his Pennsylvania laboratory. So he burns dozens of cadavers in hickory wood, coal, gasoline, kerosene fires. It's kind of like a forbidden barbecue here. None of these ignited the body, and even a traditional cremation, which is at a constant high heat of around 1,400 to 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit over 8 hours. So remember before
8 hours. Yeah, she wasn't.
Yeah,
I mean that would have been like what, 5, 4?
Yeah, well, Pansy heard that foot at 5 a.m. So if you imagine that's Mary's remains hitting the floor, is it possible for her entire body to be reduced to ash in a period of only 3 to 4 hours at a lower heat than what a crematorium pumps out? No.
Now I'm going back towards Jewish space lasers.
See, coming full circle now. Krogman didn't believe that Mary had died from spontaneous combustion. Instead, he proposes that she had been taken somewhere. She'd been cremated at a very high temperature. Don't forget that her son was a doctor, after all. Then she'd been taken back to her room where the killer added extra touches such as the oily human fat grease and soot and the charred carpet, which seems a bit convenient.
That seems so elaborate to do, though. I mean, they would have had to get her out of the house, this 175-pound woman, without waking up Pansy. And get her to the car, burn her, and then come back at, what, 4 a.m. or something.
Dump her remains. Dump her remains. Do all the extra bits. And
yeah, it doesn't really seem very in the realm of reason there.
So you can read the FBI reports, and in them, Krogman says that the murderer was very, very knowledgeable and was very well read and was probably a Charles Dickens fan. That's what he wrote.
Okay.
I was like, shit.
Inspired.
So is spontaneous human combustion real? Well, me as a little child will be happy to know that in one word, it basically isn't. Mary's case keeps popping up, but sick and wrong skeptics like ourselves, they scoff at attributing the death to spontaneous human combustion. There is no great mystery, after all, in the death of a very doped up woman wearing 1950s flammable clothing that was last seen smoking probably a filterless cigarette. The good cigarettes back then.
The Virginia Slim.
They
probably
don't make good cigarettes anymore.
I mean, did they smoke Virginia Slims back then?
in the 1950s, I just imagine she would have had a filterless one. And like, having
like a
seen
Paul Mall.
Having seen the cigarettes like Steve MRE smokes and the way he describes them from the war, like they are real cigarettes.
Did they smoke
like
Paul Malls back then, like unfiltered?
They did have Paul Malls in World War One and Two.
So maybe that's what she was smoking.
Or she just lit her fart.
Or she just lit her fart on fire. Oh my God, and it just was a little too big of an explosion.
What a riddy dying by fire fart.
Yeah, I, you know, that's the thing. Scientists have definitely debunked spontaneous combustion, but I'd like to believe it could happen.
Don't, because then I'm going to be, the next time I get stuck, I have too much weed, like the next time I take a gummy that's too strong for me, as well as being paranoid about earthquakes, I'm now going to be paranoid that I might just set on fire.
Well, I think you should avoid Taco Bell.
I leave everything to Chi-Chi.
When you're smoking weed.
Apart from my animal collection, which has to go to you and you have to keep in its entirety. Everything else to Chi-Chi.
That's going to go straight to auction.
David.
People, this is episode 937 here, Sick and Wrong. Got some phone calls coming up next. You can call the Sick and Wrong hotline at 323-522-4032. But first, here's a quick message from Adam and Eve.
D. Simon. Lance Wackerly. Some folks call them podcrafters. I call them assholes. Mm-hmm. I reckon I better tell you my sick and wrong story. Mm-hmm. I looked in the window and caught my mama working herself good with some sort of pussy toy. Mm-hmm. Some folks call it a rotating G-spot vibrating dildo from adamandeve.com. I call it a pussy toy, kind of shaped like a nanner. Mm-hmm. I guess my mama entered the code word diddle at checkout and got 50% off almost any item, 3 free adult DVDs, and a gift so sensual I can't even mention it. I reckon I'll get back to my biscuits and mustard and jerking off to D and Lance. That's funny and queer, not funny, haha.
We got a couple phone calls here to get to. The first call came like, I think this is an older call. I think this might have been over the right before the holiday show and I just missed it. But the reason I'm playing it now is because we're going to see Wackerly this weekend.
We are.
Yeah, Wackerly will definitely be hanging out. So maybe we can ask him to do what this woman's requesting.
Oh my gosh. This is YouTube lady. This is my call for Wackerly. I want to request Wackerly say disgusting because he used to say it with such disdain. That's disgusting. Something like that. He used to say it really funny. Anyway, that's it. Happy holidays, all you deviants. Bye.
She's a sweetheart. As if you slept
better
on
late
that.
Than never.
And as if you slept on that message from her.
You know, sometimes I miss things, especially when people email it to me. Or then I download it and I forget to take it from my download folder and put it into my phone calls folder.
I want to say thank you to Tim Ted on the Discord as well, because he's been listening through to the archives and he found the episode where Lance basically predicts that one day everyone will be working over Zoom. So I'm going to ask Wackerly about that.
Oh, you have to ask him. Well, maybe we can get him to say
disgusting.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember that, but it kind of makes sense that he would say it like that. That's disgusting. Very Midwest, you know. Yeah. We'll YouTube lady, if we get him to say it, we'll record it and we'll play it on the show for you. Our next call we have here is a guy that called in about a recent, it must have been a recent Overkill episode. So Kay Rambo these days has been focusing a little more on serial killer star signs, but you still have all those Overkill episodes on the Patreon.
Yeah, and I'm working on a new Overkill now. I'm just desperately trying to find a job right now, so all my focus is on that.
It takes a lot of time, and to do the regular show as well. So we do appreciate you putting that up on Patreon. But I think you did an episode on the Shangri-Las recently.
Oh, Mary Weiss, yeah, because Mary Weiss died, and it was very sad for me.
So this guy's calling in about that.
Hey, Dean Kate. So I'm calling in about the latest Overkill episode where you featured the Shangri-Las, and you know, one of the things that I want to comment to you guys is almost every episode, you guys give me a little snippet of knowledge that I didn't know before. for instance, with the Shangri-Las, I thought Cyndi Lauper was the person who invented barking in a song. But no, there it is. Shangri-Las, barking. Who just thunk, right? Anyway, love you guys. Lick my balls.
I appreciate that.
What does it mean by barking?
I don't know. I was going to ask you if you did that in Asian Babes.
No, I know what noisy means is Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper, when she's like,
I like to LARP as Cyndi Lauper.
You know what? I fucking love Cyndi Lauper, and I think she's really underrated and is fucking amazing. Great voice, great looks, still is super hot. Totally would. Would hang out. Do blow with.
Is she a lesbian?
No.
I thought she was for some reason.
Is it just because of
Maybe I'm thinking of Kay Pearson. Kay Pearson's
100% eats box, but Cyndi doesn't. She's great.
Would you want to see the two of them scissor?
Yeah, why not? In the 80s, though.
Oh, okay.
With all that hair and all that fashion. Like, whenever I think of 80s fashion, I just think of Cyndi.
Would you want to hear the song Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
I don't mind that song.
Or in the scissoring? I'd rather hear She Bop, because that's about masturbation.
We'll go with that.
It's a good song. So wait, I don't get it. What is barking then?
I'm trying to think of which...
You did the episode.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of which Shangri-La song where she's like, she's barking.
Like, is it like barking Cyndi? Like a dog?
Well, I mean, Morrissey does that. Which Smith song does he bark all over the bass line?
I don't get it. What do you mean by barking? Like barking like a dog?
Woo, woo, woo. There's no song where they do that. Unless I played a live song where you can just hear the audience or something.
So are you saying this guy's making this up?
Yeah, he needs to tell me which fucking Shangri-La song he thinks Mary Weiss is barking on.
I just want to know what bark, like what it mean, like actually making like a woof, that kind of noise?
He must, because that's barking.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's other barking. There's like, you know, when you're, you know, shilling for like outside of like in a carnival.
Oh, what? And you're barking at?
Yeah, it's like you're barking at, you know, at Mark's. Punters.
I guess you barked in the strip club when you were telling all the gentlemen to put their hands together.
Well, I guess that was part of my job is, you know, but I wasn't barking. Like, I think the door guys would bark.
Yes.
And try to get people to come into the club.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's more barking.
But I don't think he means it in that definition of the term. I think he actually means it like barking like a dog.
There's no...
Or a seal. Like a seal.
There's no Shangri-La song where Mary Weiss sounds like a fucking seal.
I'm going to be listening to the Shangri-Las to see if I can figure this out.
Well, there's a lot of good songs.
I love the Shangri-Las, but I don't recall barking like a seal.
I can imagine Cyndi does it, but I just don't know which Shangri-La song he means. Sorry, dude.
We'll have to figure this out.
Sorry, mate.
Anyway, there's like, I don't know, dozens of Overkill episodes if you join for Patreon. You can go check those out. Finally here, Driver calls in with a story.
Yo, D and Kate, this is the Driver. I guess this week's call finally got me to call in about the story I've been holding off for a minute. But yeah, I mean, the school I went to too, they mixed kids in a way, I guess. They had their own special class, the handicapped kids, RTARDs. We had the same gym class with them, so they would, whenever we did PE, they would be in there too. And this is a quick one, then let me move on to the next one. And
you know, they did the same thing at my school.
I was
how old is Driver?
I think he's a little bit younger than me.
Oh, okay, all right.
Well, it's like early 30s.
I know with me, I mean, I was like in high school in the early 90s, so it kind of makes more sense that they would, you know, do horrible things with retarded people back then. But it seems like you would have progressed by now, but apparently not. Driver's from Texas, right?
Yeah, not in Texas.
Yeah, not in Texas.
I just want to point out there that I would love nothing more than to play dodgeball, where it's you, able-bodied, versus the retard or the leg mentals. You would annihilate them. You could get up so much pent-up anger out on those people.
It would be great, though, if you
lost. I think that's how the Holocaust started.
It'd be great if you lost.
How would you lose?
I don't know. What if you did? Would you ever let them live it down?
How could my team of able-bodied people lose? I'm talking, I'd be there with like other girls and boys, like who are just as stronger. I'd be there with some good Aryan people.
I remember this kid. Oh God, I think his name was Brian something. Brian like Herrick? I'm not quite sure. I love saying his full name on the show. But this was years ago. I don't know. I don't know. I just remember he was like a special kid. And he was in like some of the special classes. But he wasn't like, didn't have Down syndrome or anything. I think he was just kind of slow. But anyway, during gym class, there were some kids that would just fuck with him and chase him around. And the gym teacher, this asshole named Mr. Trombley, he'd go, Mr. Tombi, they're chasing me for no reason.
Do not chase me. I'm full of chocolate.
They're chasing me for no reason. Mr. Tombi. And so we would be like, Mr. Tombi. He'd be like, he'd look at us and be like, it's not funny. It's not funny when you say that. Like, okay.
Oh, but it's funny when he says it, is it? Mr. Tombi.
And there's another, I remember Mr. Tombi also had an assistant named Mr. Noker.
Oh, my.
That we called Mr. Stroker. Stroker. He was like a teaching assistant, so he would have been like probably in college.
Oh, so he probably was a stroker of Mr. Tombi.
Well, I don't know. He used to be like, hey, Mr. Stroker. He's like, it's Noker. It's like, okay.
Like, that's any better.
I don't know what ever happened to that Brian kid.
The handicapped boy was caught masturbating in the bathroom. And
God, they really do have a high libido.
His cock ain't handicapped.
But didn't that girl called in about the retarded person masturbating?
Wanking? Yeah.
And did Claudia say that she was jealous of their high libido?
I think she did say she was jealous of the high libido.
Yeah.
And how she'd like to blumpkin one.
She did mention that off air, but we actually put the outtakes of her talking about her desire
for blumpkins.
For a mong blumpkin.
Everybody just made fun of him. Other than that, this is the other one. I do lawn service on the side, and there's a lady I do. I mow her yard, I clean up her leaves and whatnot, help her out.
Mow her yard.
And she has a older son. I've mentioned it a couple of times on Discord about my older son. Anyways, her son. Got to be in his like 50s, 60s, and he's a handicapped as well, which I've never seen any older retarded people.
Well, okay.
That makes a good point.
Well, wait a second, though. When you say handicapped, like mentally handicapped or like physically handicapped or both?
See, when I just think of handicapped, I do just think of somebody in a wheelchair.
That's what I think
of a leg mental, and then we have the other type.
Well, I think he means like mentally handicapped.
I think he means the other type, yeah.
Yeah. So mentally disabled.
But he does make a good point. You never see the older ones. Do they just like, I don't know, they get shuffled into a home?
I think they often do go to a home.
Yeah.
Well, I think partially because, you know, the parents, their caretakers die. So where else are they going to go?
Into a home.
Yeah.
Or tall. He's got to be as tall as me, 5'11". Usually they tend to be shorter. Anyways,
he probably is very strong.
Yeah, we all know why.
Yeah, exactly. I think you should be wary there, driver.
Make him mow the lawn.
Yeah, why isn't he mowing the lawn?
He draws pictures, the pictures I post on Discord sometimes too. So he'll draw me pictures here and there. So this one day, he was like, you want to come see my new chair? And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, I'm cool with that. And the customer, the lady, his mom, was like, yeah, come on. He just wants you to sit in his chair. So Jimmy takes me inside and shows me.
Jimmy.
It's a good retard name.
It's a great name for a retarded
Jimmy.
Person. It's just, I would be like, okay, is it a new chair that you bought? Like, what kind of chair?
Is it like a toilet seat?
A toilet seat chair. Like my brother's roommate used to have.
That's what I'd be thinking. So maybe he is leg mental because he's got a new wheelchair. And every time they upgraded the wheelchair, it's like buying a new mobile.
Oh, you think it's a new wheelchair?
Yeah, it's like buying a new mobile phone. Every time the new like upgrade comes out, he's like, look what I can do in this one.
I remember my brother. I know we've talked about this
in the
show.
But he said he's tall.
But my brother's roommate, this is like years ago when he lived in the Castro. The guy had all the parrots. this crazy tweaker. But anyway, I was over at their house, and Jeff was renting a room from this guy, and the guy was in like Florida or something. And so I was walking around checking shit out, and in his room, he had a chair, like a makeshift chair that he constructed himself with just a toilet seat on it. But there's nothing underneath. It wasn't like you could. So I was just really puzzled by it. I remember like asking my brother, I'm like, dude, check this out. Like, there's no bucket. So what's he shitting into? My brother was like, you're retarded. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, it's for ass eating. It's an ass eating chair.
Sorry.
And I was just like, who has an ass eating chair? He's like, they're actually very common. Okay, maybe in the Castro.
Yeah.
Chair, and he's like patting it real quick and like, look, my chair. And he's like, you want to sit in it? And he's like, why don't you sit down? Or like, so he's like insisting that I sit in his chair, and I don't know if he's going to go some R rage on me. And his mom's like, no, it's okay, Jimmy. He's not going to sit down. He's got to go do other work. And then he just like chills out. I'm like, okay, well, have a good day. Bye. See you next week. But I don't know. Never seen him older or taller, and don't want to feel the rage. Keep it sick and wrong. Peace.
He's kind of like Billy Bob Thornton in Sling Blade.
Yeah. He's just going to snap.
So what kind of chair was it? Was it a wheelchair?
Is it like a gaming chair? Like a cool gaming chair?
I don't know. Was it just a new chair that his mom bought him at the store?
Mr. Driver, come look at my chair.
With the Tomby.
I sound like my cousin Jerry.
You have a cousin named Jerry?
No, our cousin named Jerry. Yeah, he's now in Deadwood as well.
Oh, wait. Blair's cousin Jerry from Facts of Life.
Break down the door. I only know
Jerry Jewell.
I basically only know that show and that character because of From the Ville with Steel. Otherwise, it makes no relevance to me. Although you did make me watch the episode with her in.
Not the whole episode. But no, she's like a comedian. Facts of Life is terrible. I didn't even like it as a kid, but that's a very memorable episode. It's kind of up there with the Neptune King of the Sea molestation episode of Different Strokes, but people always cite that. But Jerry Jewell was like an 80s comedian with cerebral palsy. And so in Deadwood, she plays like the, I guess, maid at Ian McShane's whorehouse.
She empties out his pot.
Yeah, so she's kind of like the maid. But she's great in it, though.
She's fucking awesome. What an really awesome role for her. Yeah.
We're rewatching.
We were watching Deadwood, and I would just like to point out here that Powers Booth is one of the sexiest men who's ever walked this earth.
It's so funny you like that guy.
I love him.
He is awesome, though.
He's such a good actor. He's good in everything, and I can't believe I like missed him in Deadwood.
Yeah, Kate spent over an hour looking on eBay for a signed autograph of Powers Booth.
I have found a signed picture if anyone would like to send me it. It has just been my birthday.
Anyway, Driver, I want to hear more about this lawn mowing deal. Like, do you ever hang out with the guy? Like, do you ever go to, like, I don't know, play miniature golf or something?
The chair convention. Do you ever go to the store where he buys his chairs from?
Yeah, do you ever take him to the mall? That's one thing about Rotundo is they love the mall.
What, because they're just, like, walking around looking at stuff?
You know, when I used to work in Glendale, we were right next to the Glendale Galleria, and there was, like, a home for the mentally disabled. Every day at lunch, the keepers would just bring them to the mall. And they were on, like, some of them were on leashes, but others, they'd just let them roam free and would just let them go in the mall. Walking around, going up to people and just, I mean, and they were of like varying ages. There were some that were like 15 and there were some that were like well into their 50s.
I think the Glendale Galleria is the perfect place for them.
Yeah. You know, quick aside here. When I was in high school, I remember I had a job. And I had several jobs. I worked at like Burger King. I worked at Little Caesars. I worked at the supermarket. But Kessler didn't really need a job because his parents were very wealthy. But he just wanted a job because I had a job.
Yeah.
And so he got a job at Imperial Sports, which was like a, I don't know, like not kind of like a Foot Locker, maybe more of like a Dick's Sporting Goods. It was like a sporting store. And so anyway, every like Thursday, this is at the Fashion Square Mall in Saginaw. Every like Thursday, there was a, you know, Homer Rotundo's nearby, and they would also come there and they would get some kind of disability grant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever their paycheck was, they'd go straight to Imperial Sports and they would buy a Michael Jordan flight jacket and flight pants and Jordan shoes.
Okay.
And so Kessler...
They'd be styling.
Yeah. Kessler was like, every time they'd come in, he's just like, Michael Jordan! And he would have to like run, go get the shoes and be like, here, and like help them get into like the Michael Jordan suits.
Oh my God. How long did Kessler last in that job?
Like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It would have been a lot.
But yeah, he was like, they came in like, you know, a couple times a week just to buy the Michael Jordan outfits.
Did you
Michael
ever
Jordan
see
Michael Jordan was very
them?
Popular.
He was. Michael Jordan is still popular.
I do remember going to the mall, Fashion Square Mall with Kessler one time. And we were walking around and this like retarded black guy who was probably, I would say, maybe in his 40s, named Cedric.
Oh, I love that name.
Runs up to Dave. And this was maybe like, it was weird too, because this is probably like, at least like 6 months after he quit, just runs up to him in his Michael Jordan flight suit and was just like, Michael Jordan! Like gave him a hug.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really touching.
It's a heartwarming tale. Is this the mall that had a shooting and is now closed down?
No, I don't know, actually. I haven't been there. Most malls are kind of closed down now.
Yeah, I know.
So I would assume it probably is, but I don't know. No, this is the one in Saginaw. It was a big mall at the time.
Yeah, we should look it up. Because if not, it'll probably be cool to see it run down.
Maybe we'll see that guy still wearing the Michael Jordan flight suit.
Michael Jordan!
Anyway, people, you can call the Sticker on Hotline, 323-522-4032. Or send us an MP3, stickeronpodcast@gmail.com. Big ups to all the listeners who support us on Patreon and Apple Podcasts. You're the ones that keep the show going every week. We do appreciate that. We really do. Patreon.com/stickandwrong. Sign up today. Also, there is a sale going on at the T Public Store.
Is there now?
There is. I think shirts are like 35% off right now. So
that
go
is
to
crazy.
Sickandwrongpodcast.com/shop. Click on the picture of the Pope and get yourself some merch. Finally, here, Sick and Wrong Song of the Week. Had to find something appropriate for the theme of the show here. We're going to end the show with Burning Inside by Ministry.
Yeah.
You know, I would be listening to that when I self-immolated. It's from the album Mind. The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste, which came out in 1989. It's their fourth record. So I was doing a little, I did a little research here on Ministry. Did you know Al Jorgensen's real name is Alejandro Ramirez Casas?
I did not know
that.
He
was born in Havana, Cuba.
Sexy.
Shortly before the Cuban Revolution of 1959.
Wow.
At the age of 3, he moved with his mother to the U.S., or with his family, to the U.S., and he was raised mainly in Chicago and Breckenridge, Colorado. In 1964, his mother married a man named Ed Jorgensen, who was a stock car driver and mechanic for Formula One driver Dan Gurney.
That's cool.
And so she adopted his surname for herself and her son.
Oh, I didn't know he was Cuban.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense now, because he does look suave.
Yeah, I would say he looks Latin.
Yeah, yeah.
He developed an interest in music at a young age and was involved in several short-lived bands, as well as performing in the backing band for drag performer Divine.
Oh, yeah. No,
I never knew
I've
that.
Heard
Did
that.
You know that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
I was talking to a guy about it at work. That's what made me think about it. But I was like, oh, I never knew he was in the backup for Divine. So Jorgensen formed Ministry in 1981 in Chicago. And actually received quite a bit of attention for the band's debut studio albums. Came out in 83 called With Sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's very like Euro techno.
Yeah.
It's completely different than anything that he put out
later,
like late in the late 80s and 90s. That's when I got into them. And I remember I always hated those early Ministry records, but then I kind of appreciate them now.
I kind of appreciate them. It's a bit like Depeche Mode.
Like Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you could tell like Depeche Mode was really popular. He was into synth music.
It makes
sense. I think he was doing something like that. And then I think it was like Land of Rape and Honey, which came out in 1988. And he's like, nah, fuck this. I'm going to do Stigmata.
Yeah.
And then The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste. Kind of, he made a bit of a stylistic shift. And he just kind of kept going with that in the 90s. You know, he did achieve, I'd say Ministry's probably most successful record was Psalm 69.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know the full title of that album?
No, I don't actually.
Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed and the Way to Suck Eggs. Came out in 92, great record. Anyway, I think they're touring again, even though they've had like their last tour for like the past 5 years.
I've only seen them once. They're not somebody. They're not a band that travels further than London. Usually.
I love Ministry. I've seen them many times. If they come around again, I wouldn't mind checking them out. Anyway, people, we'll be back next week with episode 937. Till then, take it sleazy.
You don't call retarded people retards. It's bad taste. You call your friends retards when they're acting retarded.